A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Look at your hair. Look at your hair. Look at your beautiful cutie hair.
Well, it's funny. I was editing our episode from last week, and in it, we were like, let's keep it long with curtain bangs.
She went.
And what I did is I went there, and I was like, what should I do? He's like, how about the bob? And I was like, okay. What do we think?
Very easy to be convinced. I love it. It looks so textured and pretty. It really frames your face. You look like such confidence. A lady.
I think what I'm worried about is I look like a mutter. I look like a mutter.
Hello, mutter.
Hello,
hello, father. Carrie.
Do I look too grown up?
No.
Do I look the same but different?
Yes. That's what a haircut is, dummy.
Oh, that makes sense. That actually, that checks out. How are you?
Oh, can I tell you that I went to Danny's class today, and he, in a totally twist of events, walked up to me and was normal and was like, hey, how's Carrie? And I was like, she's good. I'm going to see her later today. And he goes, great. Tell her I say hi. And I was like, who are you? Like, who the fuck are you to come up to me and have a normal conversation? Sans any weirdness or comedy.
Can I
was
tell
like,
you,
I don't that's think unsettling.
I don't think he'd like my haircut. There, I said it. I don't think he'd like it. I think he'd want long hair for looks. I think he wouldn't like it. That's actually where I land on that. On
Danny is bald and wears a do-rag. Why do you think he cares about your hair?
I just know he does. I think he likes long hair for like a fucking moment. Have to tell you kind of some bad news that happened this week.
Shoot.
I lost my friend. Do you remember my friend who was living with cancer, pancreatic cancer for 2.5 years? He passed away on Sunday. He leaves behind his wife and his 14-year-old daughter. And he passed away on Mother's Day. And then they...
What a shit Mother's Day for her.
She wrote truly the most beautiful... the most beautiful text to inform us. And she said, I think it's fitting that he transitioned on Mother's Day because without a doubt, the thing we are most proud of is our daughter, you know, the best thing to come from our marriage. And she was such an incredible advocate for him and took such great care of him and her daughter. And like, what was incredible was that day, he passed away very early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And by noon, they said, come over. We have a revolving door. They honor Shiva.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did 3 days and they were like, come whenever. And she mm-hmm. said, bring whatever you want. Don't, whatever your heart. And I've been to 2 Shivas, and interestingly enough, one was for his dad. And what was really was, you know, a way to honor his memory in that moment was when I showed up to his dad's Shiva. I had never been to a Shiva before, but I knew you don't come empty handed. You bring something. And I didn't know what to bring. And they live across the street from the donut pub. So I brought donuts. And he mm-hmm. teased me mercilessly for bringing donuts. Because like, is the term Goya? Like, is the term like, what a shiksa? What would they call me? What would you call me as a non-Jew?
Carrie. I don't hang out with enough Jews that we would like think to call you anything.
He made fun of me for being a shiksa. He was like, of course you brought donuts to a shiva. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? And he teased me. And so there was this moment when he passed and I went and I, in his memory, I picked up some donuts and I brought them to their home. And I don't know if I mean, it was interesting. Someone was there, was talking about the similarities between those who practice Catholicism and those who practice Judaism and the like mourning process of awake and the mourning of a shiva, where it's like you are in community and you share food and you share time, you know, around those, you know, just everybody who love them. And the shiva was really impactful to me. And I just like, it's a tradition I want to take and share with the world. I'm not Jewish, so I can't proselytize, but I will proselytize on the shiva. But it worked on so many levels in that one, like her house wasn't empty. Like as soon as he left, like people just showed up. There was food everywhere. There were people drinking. There were people just like community, like the community that existed, and she wasn't alone, and she wouldn't have been alone. Her mom was in town, you know, but there were just people that, and also for the people on the outside, us who wanted to support her and her family who missed Matt, it's like the immediacy of it was so profound, of that feeling when you lose someone and you go, I don't know what to do. I want to help. And there's this thing the day of where it's like, just show up. This like open invitation. And they even said, our door is open. It's a revolving door. Come between, you know, these hours, the next 3 days, bring whatever. And I just like, it was, I rode my bike over there to Manhattan and I didn't really know. I knew some people, you know, we'd met, you know, but it was just to physically be in that space with other people mourning felt really special, profound, and like I got to cry, I got to laugh, I got to be with people who love him, and it was really special.
Yeah, I'm not gonna have a dissimilar weekend.
Really?
It's her birthday on Sunday, and we're having like a party for her.
I'm so glad you're going to have a party for her in her honor.
It's the first time I'll go to a party for someone that is not alive anymore.
You had a celebration for her after the fact, right?
Yeah, we had a memorial for her, and like there was both like a really organized like,
yeah, I remember.
Yeah, but then there's also like more shiva style, like an open house at Rita's for her. But on Sunday it's just like five families coming together, I guess, to like mark the birthday, which was, I think her youngest son said something about like, he was like, can we celebrate mom's birthday this year?
I love that. I think that's
a really good inclination.
Yeah, to be like, she's still here, she's still around. I think of those, you know, I just, loss is so hard. It sucks. And it goes, I think the older you get, the more you see the balance of life in a lot of ways, because the last 2 weeks I had two very dear friends give birth,
you know? Oh my God. Yeah.
Shout
totally.
Out to Fern. Fern. Shout out to Hank. Shout
welcome.
Out to, yeah.
Welcome, I mean, babies.
I mean, truly three, because my cousin Becky had Maddie. So it's like I have three. There are three.
And that woman babies. That you met last week at my house, her due date was yesterday. So I wonder how she's doing.
Yeah, there was just, it was so profound. You know, it just was so exciting to see all these babies and them trying to check in as much as I can and be like, how are you? How's the baby? And yeah, it's really, the balance of life, it continues to exist and it can be overwhelming. And, you know, the miracle of life and the inevitability of death and all that's in between. And what a time to be alive.
Time it was. What a time it was. I have to tell you that it's been a week.
Yeah. Well, tell me what's going on in your camp.
Well, I got really relaxed on Sunday, on Mother's Day, because I went on this beautiful hike in Beacon.
Oh my God. Wait, and like are you waterfalls. About to tell the week of.
Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I got so calm in my body. And on that hike, my friend was like, my parents have bed bugs.
I sense your calm. Let me show you pictures.
She was like, you guys, my parents have bed bugs. Look. And like her parents live, you know, across the United States. So it's not like she was like hanging with
them. But you
don't
know. They could come through the phone, Quinn. You don't know.
It's true. We don't know much about bed bugs. Now I do. Now I know a lot about them, because what ended up happening is she showed me pictures and they crawled into my brain. And then 2 days later, Griffin had bites on his body and I decided we have them. So then I paid an exterminator to come to... Or not an exterminator, an inspector. And he brought a canine into my home. So you
Which,
know.
Which, by the I way, was... is actually feels like maybe the biggest sort of shock reveal of this is that there
that
was
I let a dog in the
not
house.
Only, not only that the dog was welcome in your home, you paid for the dog to be in your home. Did the dog wear booties?
He's a working man. I don't know. I wasn't there, luckily. Matt was there. But the dog supposedly alerted on the bed. So we were like, okay, we were getting ready to spend $2,000 to like take care of the situation. And then Matt was like, I just have a weird feeling. The guy didn't seem to think we had it, but the dog was being weird. So we said we did. And then when I looked up the company he recommended to deal with it, it's like he owns that company. So it's kind of a conflict of interest. So I was like, let's call one more person. Let's get a second opinion. And we had a guy come, and this guy was great and really nice. And he took apart the bed and he stayed for a really long time. And he was like, you absolutely don't have them. And we were like, interesting. And then I said to the guy, like, are you sure? What about this? What about this? What if this? And he's like, you don't have them. And then I was like, what if I liked him already better? So I was like, what if I just want you to treat this room? And he's like, no. If I was going to do a treatment, I'd do the whole house. And I said, so what if I wanted you to do that? And he goes, I wouldn't do it because you don't have bed bugs. And I was like, please? And he's like, no, like I will charge you this, but I really don't want you to do this. And I was like, okay. And then time ticked by. I didn't know what to do. So I did what any anxiety prone person might do, and so got paid for a third opinion. Yeah. Got a third guy in here that was written as the best guy in all of New York. He was in New York Magazine's Best Of, you know, when they do the Best Of, and they do everything where they're like best apple, best lime tart,
and
best movie
best?
Theater, best bed bug exterminator. I called this guy and he was hilarious. I'm on the phone with him. I tell him everything that I just told you. And he's like, so it sounds like you don't have them. He's like, I really don't think you do. And I was like, but you're not here. And he's like, no. And if I was there, I could definitively tell you, but I don't know that you need a third person to talk to you about this. And I was like, I don't either, but I think I'm about to pay you to drive here from Long Island. And he's like, tonight? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, ugh, I knew you were going to say that. I got to tell you, Quinn, 20% of my job is being an exterminator and 80% is being a therapist. And I said, well, come do your job. And he was like, all right, let me eat some dinner, clean myself up. I'll drive over. I'll text you.
How much were these visits? Is I want to know. I want to know.
First guy was like $350.
Okay.
Second guy was free and wouldn't treat us. So the most, arguably the most honest man in New York City.
Wow.
Third guy, $360.
Okay. So third guy comes in and he
third
says,
guy comes
Quinn,
in.
Sit down on the couch. Let's chat.
No, he comes in and I'm putting the kids to bed in the guest room and he's performing like a colonoscopy on the bed. Like he's up there going deep. He was up there for over an hour with Matt, taking everything apart. He had a hair dryer. He had lots of tools. And
he had a hair dryer?
Yes, because they hate heat. So you can also, if there's like a very tight hole, you can put the hair dryer against it and turn it on and it would make them leave. So he's trying to like scare them out, you know. I don't know what he was doing. He was up there forever. And then he was saying to us, say it with me now. I don't have bed bugs. And we were like, we don't have bed bugs. And it was very intense. And what was arguably even more intense is that he was done with the dealy around 9 o'clock and he left my house at 11. He sat down at our kitchen table and he goes, did you see me? He goes, let me tell you something. I don't ever sit down in somebody's house this job because you know what? You can never be too safe. You see me? I'm going to sit down. That's how sure I am. And I was like, okay.
He said this line before. This is a line he said before.
For sure. But sure. He was hysterical. Like Nat Geo's done like a show on him. He sat down and just regaled us with bed bug stories for 2 hours.
Tell me that's what you're going to tell for today's podcast.
Oh my God. I wish. I'm not because... But
can
like,
be
I should have him on. I kept saying to him, you need to have a podcast because he's like a storyteller and he would sit and he would tell you everything and he would tell crazy stories about times he's had like seen people with bed bugs and crazy stories about people that didn't have them and went crazy. Stories about like really rich people throwing out all their furniture. And he's like, God. I saw a banker brought to his knees and he's like, I went to this like $1 million apartment. There was just a plastic white chair in the center of the room. Nothing else. The guy was sleeping on the floor. He'd lost his mind. It's like, and he's like, and you know what? He had scabies. Or he told a story about a woman that showed him her body and was like, if I don't have bed bugs, then what is this? And he was like, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but that looks crazy. You need to go to one. And then she wrote him back and was like, I'm so happy. I have cancer. And he goes, that's how crazy bed bugs are in people's minds. He goes, they're not that bad. We are so much better now than we were 10 years ago. We really know what to do. We can get rid of them. It's not that big a deal. But he's like, what is a big deal is like mentally the toll it takes on people. And he was like, I have seen people thrilled that they have cancer and not bed bugs.
I am so okay. So bed bugs is genuinely terrifying. Cockroaches, terrifying. Mice, don't like them. Scary.
Know what I actually think it might be is mouse mites, like mouse mites, because what we did find when we tore apart our house is some mouse duties. And we were like, okay, there is a mouse somewhere in the house. And
yeah.
So we're setting traps. We cleaned a bunch today. We took apart the couch downstairs and cleaned it. Like we did all these like deep cleans.
Did you find droppings in the couch?
Yes.
I hate when that happens. Yes. That's happened to me before and I don't like the feeling.
We vacuumed everything and we took all the covers off the couch and laundered them. Like I know it's like, God, please
so
get
clean.
Away
it's
from me.
Great. But so do they think that's what's, I thought you thought it might be a spider bite for a little Griff. Poor Griff. Like my heart just hurt for the poor guy. Cause
John says it can't be a spider bite and John knows bugs. John's the kind of person that you'll show him a picture and he'll be like, do you see this? He showed us a picture that looked exactly like a bed bug. And he's like, it's not, it's a diaphanous, childhood nymph cockroachian.
John, the guy, the third guy, he like is a Rolodex of bites.
Not bites. Bugs. So he can't look at a bite and tell you what it's from, but he can look at a bug and tell you what kind of bug it is. Like that's he's a bug guy.
That's wild.
Wait, he told so many stories, Carrie. It was crazy.
You still don't know what Griff's bite was from?
That's right.
So it was interesting. Quinnette was texting me this and I was really trying my best to be supportive. I was being supportive. I wasn't doing my best. I was being supportive. I was like, you know what? I hear you. It sounds like you don't have them. And you're like, how much money is my anxiety going to cost me today? And I said, it might be winning the battle, but it won't win the war, okay? That being said, the question I asked was, have you taken him to a doctor? And you were like, absolutely not.
No. I don't care about my child. I care about my home. Get it straight.
Well, no, because it was like, listen, we don't need to spend money at the doctor. We're going to fix the problem at home. But I'm thinking it's New York. They've got to have information.
Yeah, but I don't think a doctor would know. And also John told stories about doctors who will tell you because they see a bite pattern that it's bed bugs. And then people will think that they got diagnosed as having bed bugs. He's like, that's not how that works. Don't ever let a person see a bite and tell you what you have. Because he said, can I tell you something? If I get called to your house and your only evidence of bed bugs is bites and there's no other evidence when you call me, there's an 80% chance that's not what you have. That's only like 20% of the time will
so
I actually.
So he's on the phone. He's on the phone literally being like the 80%. But you were like, there might be 20 though, John.
That's what I said. And he's like talking to himself. He was like, sounds like this guy was thorough though. He like liked the free guy too. He was on board with him. He's like, he sounded like he knows what he's doing. And he's like, by the way, those dogs are bullshit. I'm really mad you even did that to begin with. And I'm like, John.
John, where were you?
Hindsight's 2020.
John, where were you? It's crazy that he charged you the same amount as John, too. That's really.
Yeah, that guy with the dog. Don't do the dogs. I'm here to also spread information.
Yeah.
Call John. He's going to retire soon. And I said to him, I'm still going to call you when you retire. And he's like, yeah, okay. Of course.
Quinn, that sounds like a really stressful week you had.
He told the craziest story where somebody wanted to hire him for this Nat Geo program that was going to be a docuseries on him. And they were like, but you need an office because we want your wife takes the calls. We want it to be a family story. We want it to be this story where like, we're showing your wife to get the calls. We're showing you in the office space. Like, we need you to have an office. And he's like, okay. And he built like a shed, like a man shed that he turned into an office. And he's like telling us stories about how he hired a carpet company. And he was like, I want this to be the thickest carpet you've ever installed at anywhere in your life. I want to feel like I'm walking on clouds. And he was like talking about how beautiful he made this office. And we're like, and then what happened? He's like, decided not to do the series, but I really like my office.
Did he just admit to conning Nat Geo?
I don't know if they paid for it in the end, but he was like so hysterical.
Did you offer him a drink? Like, what was the deal? Like, did you have dessert for him? Like, what was the deal?
He just sat and talked to us. We did offer him things. We offered him tea, water, beer, and he was like, I'm good. And he just talked for 2 hours. And then he stood up, he goes, I don't usually talk that much. And we were like, yeah, no, that was great. And he's like, yeah, I don't know what it is about you two. I really wanted to tell you everything. And we're like, great. We this really wanted to hear it.
This is great. Yeah. Quinn,
so we have a new friend.
I'm kind of glad. It feels like you thought you started the week thinking you had bed bugs and you don't.
But what I really had was a new bed bug expert as a friend.
This is great. Let's get him on the podcast. Let's hear him tell some weird fucking stories. There's been a part of the internet that's showing me like, I think it's a cautionary tale for me, but it's called like Ultimate Cheapskates. Have you seen mm-hmm. this?
No, but I love that.
Yes.
I'm an ultimate cheapskate.
No.
Oh. No.
Can I tell you? No, there's a man who bought a home. This is what I want. This is my story for today. No, it's not. There's a man who bought a home and he wanted to preserve the value of the home. And so you like see a realtor coming in and what he's done is he's put plastic pathways on the house so that the carpet won't get used. And every time this realtor steps off of it, he's like, can you please step back on the path? And then he's like with plastic wrapped up all of the faucets and the toilets. And she's like, I need to see that these work. And he's like, really? And so he undoes plastic, like everything is covered in plastic in the house. And she's like, and where do you sleep? He's like, well, I didn't want to use this main room because I wanted to make sure to preserve it. So I'm living in this closet and she can't even get in the closet. And he has like 5 shirts. And then she's like, I need to see this toilet. She's like, this is the toilet you use, but it's covered in plastic wrap. He's like, yes, I change the plastic every year so that, you know, and she's like, I just don't think that's hygienic. But you can see this woman who's like, I don't know if I can continue with this, but I'm here to do a job of like take pictures. Aye. But it's like ultimate cheapskates. Like people who like,
terrifying.
I saw a clip of a woman going around her neighborhood being like, are you about to throw out any food? Can I please have it? And the thing is these people like are not like, they have a home. They like, they're not.
No, I get that. I get that.
I think it's, yeah. Like they have the means to live a life. And so I think sometimes it's good to sort of see the other side.
I don't
side.
Think when you meet an unhoused person, your first thought is, what a cheapskate.
Well, I just thought of like asking for food door to door feels like very, my grandma talks about in the Great Depression, like her mom, my grandma was a baby when the Great Depression was happening, but like people would knock on doors during the Great Depression and being like, do you have any food? And like, it was customary to be like, yeah, here you go. My grandma told me the story of her mom falling asleep on the couch and she was sleeping, you know, with her hands under her cheek and she heard someone come in and was like going to steal stuff and she knew it would be safer if she just pretended to sleep and let them take whatever. It'd be less dangerous to her.
Mm-hmm.
But she remembers like sneakily taking off her wedding ring and just like putting it between her hands like mm-hmm. very slowly so that she had no jewelry on her, so she wasn't a target. And she just was like, pretended to sleep while they raided the house.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. There's this, my grandma also told us a cautionary tale, but it's how the woodpecker came to be. Have I mm-hmm. the woodpecker came to be where it was during the Great Depression, and there was a person who was starving, and he was going around asking for cake, and this woman was at home, and she was baking a cake, and he could smell it through the window, and he knocked on her door, and he asked her for some cake, and she said, yeah, I can get you some cake. I'm just in the oven. And when she takes the cake out, it's a beautiful cake. It's perfect. She can't possibly share that with him. It's too good. Mm-hmm. So then she bakes another cake and she puts it in the oven, and that, and she says, just hold on. And he's knocking. Can I have some cake? She goes, just hold on. It's in the oven. So she's constantly baking these cakes and they're more and more beautiful. And she's getting less and less inclined to share with this person. And slowly she starts to morph into a bird.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. It takes a turn. It's a little bit fantastical. And she becomes the woodpecker, doomed to knock on doors for the rest of her life because she was too greedy to share.
Oh, I like it. It's a good lesson.
Isn't that a fun story?
Yeah. Thanks, Grandma. Is that your story?
That's my story for the day.
Great.
By the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily.
Who goes?
I'm Carrie. That's
Oh, me.
And we have someone to thank on Patreon.
Oh.
We do.
Okay, who?
Hold on. Hold on, I gotta find her. Still looking for. Oh fuck! I just came up on my credit card receipt. Damn it!
Don't look at that. That's not gonna make you feel good if you look at
that. We got Jamie P. It's Jamie P for me. Jamie P, you are a P for Patreon. And C, we're gonna love to have you here in Patreon. We're gonna record an episode soon for the May drop.
Jamie P, please never flee. I'm on my knees asking you, please. Please, do you know if it's fleas that are biting my son? Cool.
Really cool stuff, Jamie. Thanks for joining Patreon.
Who goes first?
See you in the party.
See you in hell. See you
in- Jamie P, see you in hell. Okay, so we are on.
Can I also tell you that I work for my father, you guys? And I just emailed him to be like, you're supposed to mail this book. I ran the credit card for this guy and he never got his book. Can you figure out why he never got the book? And he wrote back, I don't know if I can check that. Tell him the book is not that good and he should just keep doing what he's doing. If that's not an advertisement to buy my father's book, y'all, I don't know.
I want that pull quote.
When was the last time you refreshed your bedding? Sleep cooler with Avocado's naturally breathable, certified organic sheets. Choose from GOTS certified organic cotton, linen, or hemp. All made safe certified to the highest standards of non-toxic safety, delivering the ultimate in luxury, sustainability, and style, and a deeper, more restorative sleep. Join Avocado's mission to be one of the world's most sustainable brands at avocadomattress.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Okay, so I got this story a couple weeks ago. I was out to dinner with my sister and her colleagues at work. And it was really fun. It was like an opportunity. I could see my sister and she had a team meeting. And I showed up and I was the only non-accountant and the poorest one there. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but I sat next to this lovely gal who was really cool and I really liked her. I sat next to her and I was like, I like this vibe. She's great. She's cool. So anyway, so we're at the end. We're at Valbella in Midtown. It's an Italian spot. And the server was like, I think he knew it was like on the corporate card or something, but like not very attentive, not interested, just was like, you know, whatever. At the end of the dinner, the server comes up to me and this lovely lady and he's like, so do you want to hear a crazy story? And it was like, yeah, I would love to hear a crazy story. He's like, well, this is one of three restaurants. And the chef at one of the restaurants in Connecticut was murdered. And then he proceeded to tell me, like, I did not say I have this podcast. I did not say anything of like, okay, hey, I'm into murder. And he just like launches. He's like, you didn't hear it from me. And I was like, what is happening? The tip has already been dropped. Been like sitting on your back. But oh, also there was a moment in the beginning of the meal where he's like, would you like to hear the specials? And we're like, yes, tell us the specials. He proceeded to do like a 10-minute set on all the specials. And I was like, are you going through the menu? I didn't understand what was happening. He kept being like, and for this fish, and then this fish. And I was like, how many fucking fish are on this special? Like, put it on the fucking menu. Mm-hmm. Anyway, here's the story of a chef who was murdered in Connecticut.
Okay. Tell us.
The Connecticut Post. I got News Times, Bronx News, AP News, and from my server at Valbella. I want to introduce you to Zef Vulevic, a.k.a. Joe Vully. He is a chef based in Connecticut. He's 41 years old, and he is originally from Montenegro, him and his family. So he emigrated to the U.S. He's one of seven. He immigrated from Montenegro from communist oppression in the 1970s with his family. Mm-hmm. And when him and his family came in, his parents started working in restaurants. So he grew up in a kitchen. He grew up working at his family's restaurants. And him and his siblings ended up growing up and starting and cooking at restaurants. That's their family business. And they typically had Italian restaurants. They're not Italian, but who cares? We all love Italian. When you're here, you're family. So he has him and his family. His brothers own two restaurants in Manhattan. There's three in Westchester. There's one in Stamford, Connecticut. And he has a restaurant on Main Street in Danbury, Connecticut. And this mm-hmm. is billed as like a nice Italian Manhattan style restaurant in Danbury, Connecticut. And he co-owns it at this point with his 28-year-old nephew, Marash Gochaj. You know All right. what? I'm going to give you the name. G-O-J-C-A-J. I'm just going to call him Marash.
Yeah.
So Marash, the restaurant is called Gusto Restaurante. They opened it in 2002 along with another business owner. But by this point, the two of them have bought it out. So it's just the two of them that are in business together. Joe, our chef, is known to keep to himself, but he loves his restaurant. He works really long hours and he works really hard to make this a successful place of business. Mm-hmm. The first year that the business is opened, it kind of lags, and then they start to add bougie shit to their menu. So they add things like Kobe beef, and they make the wine list to like 900 labels, and they start serving food on fancy china and drinks in Waterford Crystal, and boom, the business triples. It's April 5th, 2004. Business is very good at this point. And allegedly earlier that night, his nephew was in an argument with another guy and Joe goes and stops it. Joe shuts down the restaurant or the kitchen for the night. He has some drinks with his nephew. He says goodnight and he leaves. And he hasn't been heard from since.
Ever again?
Ever again.
Jesus.
Well, he's been, nah, you'll see. So he doesn't have a car. And at this point, they start like looking into what's going on in his life. Now, Joe had recently separated from his wife, who he has two kids with. So he is living with his nephew, who he runs the business with. He doesn't have a car. On occasion, he'll use the company van. But this night, he left his phone at the bar and he walked home. And his nephew's like, I think he just walked home. And they start to look further into his dealings and they see that his house is in foreclosure. He's filed for bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
Sidebar, while the server is telling us sort of like the bare bones of this story after dinner and after I had a couple glasses of wine and an espresso martini, he was like, yes. And the wife left him for the busboy.
Wow.
And then... The wonderful lady who I was with was like, I thought it was he left his wife for the busboy. I don't know what's happening. There's a busboy. It's a family restaurant business. I don't know. A lot of gossiping. This was not in the news articles, but I figure I had to tell you, what I
heard firsthand. Did. That's the juicy stuff. The stuff you get from the servers. That's always going to be the best stuff.
When I went to research the case, some of it was not totally exactly what he said. And you could see the game of telephone, how it like sort of devolved.
We were like, that's fun too, to be like, oh, I see what you thought happened. Okay.
This server like was not very communicative, did a 10-minute set on the specials and then waited till the tip was dropped and then decided to tell us about how a chef was murdered at a sister restaurant.
I have to be honest and say, I really like his style.
I was like, don't you want us to leave? Don't you want to go home? Nope. What are you doing? Okay. So there is no signs of struggle at the restaurant. And Mirage, his nephew, is, there's no chance he just ran off. There's no chance he committed suicide. Mm-hmm. He would be described as, or his nephew would say, he didn't let his problems really get him. He mm-hmm. said he's a big guy. He can definitely handle himself. So it'd be surprising if someone attacked him. Mm-hmm. He's got a good heart and good intentions. He's passionate about food and cooking. He had a couple of drinks, no more than usual. He got very emotional, and I think he went away for a while to relax. At least that's what we're hoping. So they're still hoping he's going to walk right back in the door, hopefully safe right. and sound. It's a little over 2 weeks later, and it's Earth Day, so it's April, and they find Joe's body
Oof.
In the woods in Bedford, New York. His body is dismembered. Seven pieces,
oh my God.
And there is evidence that he has been shot twice in the back of the head.
Whoa.
Because of the execution style, the police are trying to investigate what the hell happened. They have no idea. They think because of the execution style cause of death, they think maybe it's tied to the Albanian organized crime, like maybe the Albanian mob in something. The restaurant was obviously closed down. It reopened in May, and then Mirage ends up selling the business in 2005. And mm-hmm. it's noted that Mirage is the primary suspect on the police. He's the last person to see Joe. He lived with him. He's working with him in this business. The story that they have, the situation around which Joe dies mm-hmm. is this. Mirage is a young guy, hot-headed, and he gets into a fight with his Uncle Joe, who he owns the business with. It escalates. Joe goes to leave the restaurant to mm-hmm. run away. Mirage finds him, drags him back inside the restaurant. He right. then proceeds to shoot his uncle twice at point-blank range in the back of the head and to dispose of the body. He uses a handsaw or a meat saw to cut up the body in seven pieces. What he then does is stuff the remains into trash bags, drives over the state lines to Bedford, New York, where he dumps his uncle's body in a wooded area off a rural cul-de-sac. He then went on to act as if nothing happened. As you heard from those poll quotes I said earlier, is he spoke to the press about what he thinks happened. He didn't, like, there was no him hiding. The police, I think, very early on pegged him as the person who did it. But he would go on to say he had no idea of his uncle's disappearance. You might be asking about what is the forensic evidence tell us.
What does the forensic evidence tell us?
That's a really great question, Quinn. I'm so glad you asked it. When they searched the restaurant where they believe the murder happened, where they believe the murder occurred, there is no blood anywhere. They're not able to find blood at all. However, there is evidence that 3 weeks after this murder, the carpets were all replaced.
Okay. And not that many people are like, I know what the next step is.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to where I committed a murder.
It's still...
and sneak in with a carpet guy.
Yeah. It's still confusing though. I mean, this is going to be sort of the biggest, you know, sort of piece of information that would maybe cast, I think, some doubt on Mirage, which is, or Mirage, where... this is the fact that there's no blood anywhere. Like, you can replace a carpet, but I'm still like, there had like luminol tests. Like, there has to be some. I mean, it is a restaurant, so they are probably cleaning up blood as they serve meat. I don't know. But mm-hmm. again, like, to not find any evidence of this or in anyone's car, nothing, is, I think, pretty surprising to me. But Mirage, he's not necessarily an upstanding citizen. In August of 2007, he is charged with sexually assaulting a woman in an elevator at one of the other, you know, aunt and uncle's restaurants, like at the mm-hmm. top of a Marriott, where she was like, I was out to dinner with my boyfriend. I went in this elevator with this guy. He held me against my will for a couple of minutes. And then in 2008, he was jailed for drunk driving in New York. And mm-hmm. right after that, he was incarcerated. So right after that, he was charged formally with the murder of his uncle. His trial is in 2010, and the trial lasts for 6 weeks. During the trial, it is revealed that his childhood was normal. In fact, his family was very supportive, which is something
that we hear a lot.
Often, especially on this podcast. Like, we're never like, wow, seems like a pretty supportive, kind, benevolent family. Like a family who immigrated from Montenegro who just all went into business with each other and worked in the restaurant business. Everybody seemed cool. His life seemed fine. In fact, he like went into business with his uncle on this restaurant. Interestingly enough, he also has, I read somewhere that he had an arson conviction in New York State. So maybe he, there's some evidence that I think is being used towards this case. They also have an eyewitness that, or a server at Gusto Ristorante who will testify that, he had seen Mirage fire two shots from his gun at some people claiming that he was in an argument with them. So there's like, this is sort of the, what puts a gun in his hand. A server's like, I saw him use a gun. And he was pretty hot-headed, and he shot the gun at just, you know, some people on the street, which is like not a great look. Now his defense is he didn't do it. His defense is consistently powerful. Not guilty. Yes, really powerful stuff. He's like,
really makes you think.
I had a normal childhood. It wasn't me. And for some reason, that's not enough. There's nobody else that is they like for the murder. There's nobody else that they're even investigating. Again, the only evidence would say that he replaced the carpet and that the van was cleaned that he moved the body in. At the trial, obviously, this is a devastating trial for the family because not only is this 28-year-old, well, now 31, he's accused of murdering his uncle. This is his family member. So his mom is Joe's sister, right? And at the trial, he has his two brothers, his mom. They have a bunch of the other siblings in the family who are there in support of Mirage and also mourning Joe. Really must be very confused on how they stand on all of this. After the jury sees images of the dismembered body, hears the evidence against him, the jury deliberates for a total of 3 days, and they come back with a verdict of guilty. At sentencing a year later in 2011, the defense has asked for the minimum sentence of 25 years, and the prosecution has asked for 55 years. At the sentencing, there was only one family member who spoke, and it was Joe's brother, Peter, who was also Mirage's cousin. And he begs the judge for leniency. He says he believes in his nephew's innocence. Mirage will say that I stand here not guilty of this crime. The people who are guilty are still out there. People do make mistakes. Unfortunately, this time it's the state that made the mistake.
Wow.
He ends up getting a sentence of 50 years in prison, which is obviously much greater than what the defense was asking for and only a little bit lower than what the prosecution was asking for. Since then, obviously, there's been appealing. There's been an appeal process that he's been trying to use. What's interesting is that Mirage's defense attorney at the time, whilst defending him, his defense lawyer, the head guy on his team, was facing federal felony charges himself for failing to pay his income tax. Now, this would obviously seem like, wow, this seems like this guy, his lawyer was under sort of suspicion and was under investigation and was in the midst of a legal trauma himself. And so could he have been as present? Could he have served in the best way possible? And the judge knew this at the time and even asked Mirage, like, Mirage, are you cool with this attorney? Are you satisfied? And he kept saying yes. So it's making it challenging to appeal. Additionally, there were other people in the firm who was working on his case. So it wasn't just this one guy who had too much on his plate. It was like he was one guy of many. So he's serving his sentence in the McDougal Walker Correctional Institution, which is a maximum security prison in Suffield. But then in 2018, his lawyers start to put out that they have evidence that could possibly clear his name. The person I referred to as who put the gun in his hand, the person who talks about how they saw him shoot the gun off, apparently this person was in trouble with the law elsewhere and the prosecution had told him that his testimony would help him with a plea deal, or would help him, it would help exonerate him in mm-hmm. his other case. Mm-hmm. And when the defense lawyers found these emails, they were like, well, that wasn't disclosed to the jury, which could have put a question mark on the validity of this person's argument. And so they kept asking. At the end of the day, this plea deal wasn't reached, right? They enticed him with it, but it didn't come to fruition. So it didn't need to be disclosed to the jury. Since it was not disclosed in the trial, they said only after he was promised a pardon did this guy decide to sign his statement. This is the waiter who had a past drug conviction. And so he testified with what he saw, which was Marish with a gun. And he also claimed that Marash called this server months before the trial wanting to talk to him because he said that his statements were the only ones damaging to him. So there's some like questionable, like backdoor dealings. The detective said that they did discuss a deal. And while the deal was not executed fully, this detective did write a letter to the pardon board after the trial in his defense. Mm-hmm. Defense lawyers for him in the appeal also say that the Danbury police withheld evidence on the case and claimed that there was no truth to where the murder happened, they believe, in the restaurant. So all of this stuff is obviously in the air. What's important to note is that the appeal is still in process. Like, I saw some court documents that it was like 2024. They're looking into it. There's no article on the outcome. What I do know is it seems like he is still in jail, although this server, again, later was like, and he's out. So I don't know what the truth is.
Totally. Nobody does. Said
he's out, where it could be like he wants to have an appeal and it looks like the appeal might go through.
Right.
The server, of course, doesn't know. So that's the imagine story that. Of how I went out to dinner with a bunch of accountants. And
I love it.
I found out about a murder. And
that's
that's
an amazing origin story. I love it. I'm here to tell you a story. This happened on April 23rd, 2006. And there's this guy goofing around, having weird behavior. And the police come and are like, are you okay, sir? Just a goof. Damn. They're like, sir, are you okay? You seem to be wearing olden days clothing. Maybe you shop vintage. And you've got a camera around your neck. You're taking pictures of people. What are you doing? You're being weird. People are freaked out by you. We've been called to check on you. And are you okay? And he's like, what year is it? And they're like, it's 2006. And he's like, I think it's 1958. And they're like, why do you think that? And they're like, you seem off. Give us your ID. They look at the ID and they're like, well, this is weird very quickly, because these are IDs that people were given during the years of the Soviet Union. And that's the kind of ID it is. And they're like, but Ukraine got independence and the Soviet Union disbanded in 91. So this ID is old, like it's like 15 years old. So they're like, what's the deal? But the photo on the ID looks just like him. And it's that they're like, we don't know what to do. This guy,
that's a tough one.
Like, okay, I think it's a mental health issue. So maybe let's go get help. But we as police can't figure this out. We shouldn't be figuring this out. Let's go to a psychiatric clinic. They're in Kiev. So they go to the psychiatric clinic and this doctor examines him and records the session the very same day. And in this video, he's like, my name is Sergei Valentinovich Pomerenko, and I was born in Kiev, June 16th, 1932. And they're like, but then you would be 74. So Sergei's like, I'm not 74. And he's like, yeah, you don't look a day over 30. And he's like, that's really rude. I'm 25. And they're like, okay, well, how did you end up here? And he's like, I don't know. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And they're like, yeah, but what was the last thing you remember doing? And he's like, okay, I was with my fiance, Valentina Kurish. We were taking pictures. See, here's my camera. And they're like, yeah, we saw your camera, your olden days camera, you weirdo. And he's like, well, we were taking pictures and then I saw something weird in the sky. It looked like it was shaped like a bell. And I was like, what is that? I took a picture of it. And as soon as I took a picture of it, I looked up and I was here in 2006. But this is not where I'm supposed to be. And they're like, all right, give us the camera. And he's like, here. And they're like, okay. And they check it out and they're like, okay, we don't really know how to develop this film since it's old and the camera is old. So then they go to a like expert photo man, which is, I'm sure, what that's called. And they're like, yes, can you absolutely do this? And they're like, yeah, this film they stopped making in 1970, but I think I can figure it out. And the pictures are in Kiev in the 1950s. And there's a picture of a woman with him the same age. He's wearing the same outfit in the pictures as he is in the interviews.
Okay.
And then there's a picture of what looks to be a UFO in the sky over Kiev as the last picture.
Here's where I'm at right now. This is really fucked up. This is super fucked.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I actually do like it. It's weird because here's the deal. This guy could not have like known what, if he's conning anyone, he could not have known what clothes this person is wearing in this footage, in this film, because this mm-hmm. film, you can't just like, it's not digital. You can't right. look and see. Wow. Right.
So they're like, okay. And they show him the images that they developed. And he's like, yeah, I know. I told you. Like, why are you showing me? And he's like, I don't understand why I saw this thing in the sky. That's what I saw. And why the second I took a picture of it, I went to look at the picture on my camera. Like, or no, he didn't look at the picture. You're right. It's not digital. As soon as he looked through his camera at it and clicked the picture, he ended up here.
No probes.
So then they have Sergei on camera in this psych ward in Kiev, go into his room that they gave him at this clinic and never come out and never be seen again. He just vanishes. So they're like, he's what? There's bars on the windows. There's Stop. Camera footage in the hallway. Stop. He's gone. He vanishes.
This is a movie. You're doing a movie.
So they start looking for him. And they start looking at old records of people in Kiev in the 50s. And they find his name, Sergei Valentinovich Ponomarenko from Kiev. But they're like, he was declared missing in 1960. So they're like, okay. Like 2 years after he says this was happening on the street or whatever, he was declared missing legitimately. So they're like, okay, we do have this picture of this woman he was with, Valentina Krish, so let's look her up. She'll be like in her 70s, even though she's a young woman in this picture. It's like, what the fuck? They look up Valentin, but like, he's not. He's a young man because he's time traveling. So it's like, did she time travel too? No. So they find her. She is in her 70s, and they're like, were you ever engaged to this man named Sergei? And she's like, yeah. And we were engaged, and in 1958, he disappeared for a few days, but he came back. And they're like, okay, what happened when he came back? And she said, when he came back, he said he could see into the future. And he was telling me about the future, and he was interviewed on national TV, and he talked about cell phones, and he told us all about cell phones. And
stop.
Like, then she gives them a picture that's labeled 2050, and there's a really, and there's an older looking Sergei, but it looks like Sergei in Kiev with skyscrapers that do not exist,
holding a cell phone,
like a Kiev skyline, yes, that is doesn't exist, like new buildings in it, if that makes sense.
Is it tacky at this point to ask, when he's in Kiev, who runs it? Russia or Ukraine?
Oh my God.
That's what I want to know.
Well, you'd want to know about a million things. This guy's time traveling all over the place. And she says, but then he disappeared again in 1970 and he never came back. I keep like waiting for him to come back, but I've never seen him since.
Did she move on with her life? Did she get married?
Good. I don't know if she got married, but she was like, I keep expecting I'll see him again. So they're like, they're looking at this ID card that he gave them, and they're like, it's weird because there's a stamp on every ID like this, but his is really fuzzy, which is weird because if you look at any ID that was these kinds of IDs, they were really, really clear. And they're like, another thing rubbing us wrong is when the doctor asked him about his birthday, he gave June as a birthday, but the ID actually says March, like the ID date the month doesn't match. And like, dude, I know you're time traveling and you're tired, but your birthday doesn't change. So that part should stay the same.
50 years later, 2 months later, 2 months earlier.
So also, if the film had time traveled from that time period, like, not like they know how time travel works, but they're like, it'd be really old. I don't think it would work. It was made of cellulose acetate, which it could spontaneously combust very easily. So we don't think you could have time traveled with this film.
They're using back to the future technology.
Yeah, they're like using movie rules where they're like, that does seem weird. They're also like, listen, if this film was from back then, shouldn't it look messed up and cracked, but it looks great? And then they're like, hold up, let's do more homework on the film. And they're like, you could still purchase this kind of film up until 1990, and it was better quality later. So we think this was film purchased later. We don't believe it was from the 50s. We believe it was closer to from the 80s or something. So they're like, nah. And then they take the photo from 2050 that the old woman gave them. And they're like, okay, let's really look at it. And they really study it. And they're basically like, some of the skyscrapers that look like they could have been added in, like by Photoshop possibly, why we think they were is that they repeat themselves.
Okay.
So they're like, if you study this close enough, this is a Photoshop job. So this YouTuber gets really obsessed with it. And he's like, oh, I know what this, like, he studies the hell out of this case because this happened. And because he had disappeared, everybody was like, what in the world? So this guy's looking and he's like, I think that there's this Ukrainian TV show called Aliens that talks about if aliens exist. And the picture that we have of like this alien spacecraft, I think is from this TV show. Like it's messed with, but I think, right, I can like origin story it. And he's like, also when I look at the architecture, the picture that has been Photoshopped, I think I can even find the Empire State Building in it. Like I think that I can like prove more like how this was doctored. And to this day, people are like, this was definitely fake. We proved it was fake. We proved it was Photoshop. It was this, it was that. But other people are like, yeah, does it not bother anybody that he actually did disappear? And that,
yeah, that's the question, is like, through the,
he did disappear. He was never seen. Nobody ever found him again. It's a really crazy story. And like, if you look online and you Google Sergei Panamarenko, it will be like, this was debunked. This was shown to be fake. This was shown to be somebody that was fake. And that it's because of these things that we think this photo was Photoshopped. And we think that this film was like, right, too high of quality to have been from the period that he says he's from. But you're like, what? Yeah, but where did he go? He didn't know where you were taking him. So like the heist factor of like being able to sneaky escape out a barred window or like deal with the cameras doesn't totally add up, because he couldn't have like planned ahead for how to escape where you were going to take him. He didn't know what you were going to do when you found him. And like, to what end? I get that it's like really fun prank and that it's like mystical and it like makes people question everything and be like, is time travel real? It's amazing. And are aliens real? And this is so fun. But it seems like a really intense decision to get this old woman involved and to do all these things, to like find the missing guy, go visit the old woman and be like, you have to get on board and help me tell this story by pretending that the boyfriend, the fiance you have on record, remember when he legit disappeared? Because I can't fabricate that past record. It has to be real. Okay, remember your fiance that disappeared? Can you pretend that he visited you and that he was a time traveler for me, ma'am? Like, how did that fucking conversation go? And she's like, yes, I definitely want to help you do this prank and pretend that my fiance was a time traveler with you. And I'll tell the police when they come that he visited me and that he brought me things and that he told me about cell phones.
That's fucking weird.
I feel like I need to know more.
Do you think it's real? What's your gut?
I don't know, but I need more information. I'm just telling you that I couldn't find a ton of information. By the way, I didn't source this, but I read The Economist, The Mirror, historicmysteries.com by Laura Dillon was a really good source. And Indy 100 was another good source. I read anything I could kind of find, and it just repeats this story in a really cute, this, then this, but it was fake. The end. And you're like, I need more debunking. Tell me about that woman. Tell me about a theory of how he got out and where he is now. Tell me more. And none of them do. And I just was left wanting. And so if anyone has any information more than what I've presented on this case, specifically what I want to know is about this woman. Actually, I'm going to, and I'll do more work too. Let's find her name again so that I can tell you. Valentina. And the last name is Kurish, C-U-R-I-S-H. You guys, look her up and help me figure this out, please. Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I got to go pick up Griff.
Bye.